Sri Chaitanya Manavistam Stapitam Jainabhutale Sayam Rupakadamayam Vedati Sapandantikam. Vanshikopaturubhyascha Kripasindubhayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah. Kapila Muni has begun his instructions to his mother Devahuti on Sankhya Yoga, which we will hear is a mixture of Bhakti Yoga and Astanga Yoga. Astanga Yoga means the eight-limbed practice of yoga, beginning with rules and regulations, and then asanas and pranayama breathing exercises, withdrawing the mind in different thicknesses of meditation, culminating in samadhi, or full focusing of the mind without any deviation upon Krishna. So it's a mixture. The Sankhya Yoga is a mixture between Bhakti Yoga and this Astanga Yoga. Now, Kapila Muni has explained where the seed or the essence or the power even or the taste to propagate Bhakti Yoga or the Sankhya Yoga comes from. And it comes from the association with devotees, because naturally the consciousness must be attached. It's unavoidable. Whatever the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains this point, jayato visaya pungsan sangas teso pajayate. Whatever we think about, we become attached to that. This is the basic principle of advertising. They put pictures up and catchy sayings. Why? So that the consciousness will focus on something that they want to sell you. Because as soon as the consciousness focuses on it, we get attached and we think, yes, I need it, it will make me happy, etc. So as long as the consciousness is focused on anything within the world of matter, with ourself, thinking of ourself as the center, that attachment that builds up will cause our, what is that? The arrow pointing like this, and the arrow pointing like that, and the arrow pointed like that. What is that?
Triangle,
yes. Arrow pointed like this, then an arrow pointed like this. Oh no, it's circled a little, isn't it? With the arrows. What is that the sign for?
Recycling,
yes. So that's what happens when we focus our consciousness on anything in the material world. Recycling. We become recycled. And that recycling is birth. The material elements come together and make another body. And then when that body dies, we are recycled. It's very energy efficient. And it's also based on solar energy. So that's also very energy efficient. Solar energy, you get it? The soul's energy? Really funny, isn't it? So the basic principle is to take the attachment and place it on the sadhus. Real sadhus, who are detached from the world of matter. And what to do in relationship with the sadhus, we should hear from them. So then Kapila Muni described what a sadhu is and the result of this. So, the last verse that we read, he explained the ultimate result of this process. In 27, He said, by not engaging in the service of the modes of material nature. So we take our consciousness off of the world of Maya, and by developing Krishna consciousness, knowledge and renunciation, and by practicing yoga, in which the mind is always fixed in devotional service unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And what is the result of that? This is the basic process. Transferring the attachment from this side, the material side, to the spiritual side. So what is the result of this process of fixing the mind on the Lord? One achieves the Lord's association in this very life. For I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Absolute Truth. So when Devahuti heard this, about this process, she inquired, what kind of devotional service is worth developing and practicing to help me easily and immediately attain the service of your lotus feet? So what should I do to quickly make advancement and attain this goal of transcendental, beyond this body, beyond time, in eternity, to gain that loving service to the Lord's feet? What can I do? She said. The mystic yoga system, as you have explained, aims at the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And it is meant for completely ending material existence. So it will completely pull us from the material world. That is the goal. Please let me know the nature of that yoga system. How many ways are there by which can understand in truth that sublime yoga? My dear son Kapila Dev, after all, I am a woman. It is very difficult for me to understand the absolute truth because my intelligence is not very great. This is not politically correct. Someone should inform her. But this is what she said. There's actually, in case contemporary politicians, etc., have not noticed it, there are differences between men and women. Different moods, different abilities, different strengths, different weaknesses. So she said, because of my inherent weakness, if you will kindly explain it to me, it may not be hard. So she's asking him for mercy. This is one of the qualities that the soft-hearted women can do more than hard-hearted men. The women, they can say, oh, they're false egos. Except, of course, now that they're liberated. They're liberated from being humble also. So their false egos can be just as strong as a male false ego and as outrageous. But in this humble mood that is actually natural for a woman, they can ask for some special dispensation and some mercy, which gives them actually the greatest qualification for advancing in Krishna consciousness. So in any case, she says, Devahuti says, please kindly explain this to me, even though I am not very intelligent. I can understand it and thereby explain it to me in such a way that I can understand it and thereby feel transcendental happiness. So he's going to explain this in a simple way so that we can understand it. Maitreya Muni said, after hearing the statement of his mother, Kapila could understand her purpose. She wants to advance. And feeling herself very disqualified. And actually, if we look at ourselves, if we look at our position, regardless of who we are, what we think we have, we are all completely disqualified. This is the special characteristic of Kali Yuga. No one is qualified. By birth, by training, no one is qualified. Everyone has deeply rooted, very bad impressions in their consciousness, and we are very determined to follow them. So when Devahuti, in humility, explained her disqualification, in other words, she was so humble, and in Kali Yuga, everyone is proud, regardless of what they have, what they've done, what their bad disqualifications are. Everyone is very proud. So Devahuti was not like that, and she melted Kapila Muni's heart, so he wanted to be very merciful to her. So he became compassionate towards her because of being born of her body. And then he described the Sankhya system of philosophy, which is a combination of devotional service and mystic realization as received by disciplic succession. So here, he's going from now until the end of the chapter, he's going to explain the actual essence. It's been explained before earlier in this chapter. But what is there going to be? Because so many practices, so much philosophy is going to be explained. But it is essential, really, that we understand what that essence is. Why? Because if we're performing practices for something, if we don't keep the goal in mind, if we don't keep that clearly focused before us, what exactly the goal is, what the purpose of all the practices are, we can easily be left astray, go astray. And if you go even one degree astray, in the beginning you may be close to the line, but after some time, if you're going even one degree astray, the distance between you and the true line, the goal, the essence, the essential practices, becomes greater and greater. So we always have to be aware of what we are actually trying to do. Conscious. Krishna conscious. We have to be conscious of who we are, what we're doing, what we're trying to do. Not just get caught up. Yes, 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 I'm doing it, I'm going, I'm going, I'm going. So quickly, I'm going, and we forget whether we're going in the right direction even. So he's going to explain many, many times by the end of this chapter, and Prabhupada will explain it, and the verses will explain it in the succeeding chapters as well. But in this chapter especially, which is entitled The Glories of Devotional Service, what that essence is will be explained. Smartavya satatam vishnu vishra tadvavyo na jatu chit sarva vidi nishedha cha itya eva kinkara. That all the rules and regulations are meant to serve or assist the actual essence, purifying principle, which is to keep one's mind focused on Krishna with devotion. Mayeva mana adatsvaya mayam eda neveshaya. This is the principle of Krishna consciousness. Somehow or another, we should focus our mind on Krishna with great devotion, thinking to different degrees according to how advanced we are, that Krishna, you are the Lord and I am your servant. Let me make not a servant like of this world where someone serves to get some money, to get advantage, to take over the position of the master. No, no, no. Not like that at all. But with great affection, because this master, this Krishna, is so wonderful. And as we read yesterday with Prabhupada, explain the whole thing in one sentence. He said, by the serving mood, by an increase of that mood of serving, loving service, everything will be revealed. And nothing actually can go wrong for a person who is fixed in this. Nothing, nothing can go wrong. Nothing. So he's going to explain this point. So first, a bit of an introductory summary. Kapila Muni said, The senses are symbolic representations of the demigods, and their natural inclination is to work under the direction of the Vedic injunction. So the senses work under direction. It's natural. Now we try to be happy by letting our senses go wild. We think this is the purpose of life. Allow the senses to have unrestricted, wild enjoyment at every moment. But it's impossible, because that which gives us pleasure now with the senses, with the eyes, with the nose, with the ears, the touch, if we continuously do that thing, it will disgust us after a short period of time. Although we consider that nowadays the goal, it is not actually suitable to bring us happiness. And it's not natural, actually. The only way to become happy by sense enjoyment, by sense pleasure, is by not engaging in it. And then you enjoy the anticipation. Tonight, I will enjoy this. And then, if you're never engaging in it, then for some time there will be some pleasure in it, fleeting as it is. But that's the only way to enjoy the senses, is to not engage in sense gratification. And actually, when the senses are peaceful due to goodness, then actually become satisfied. So in any case, the natural inclination of the senses is to work under the direction of the Vedic injunctions. As the senses are representatives of the demigods, so the mind is the representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The mind's natural duty is to serve. This is so foreign, but it is fully true. The senses like to be restricted so that they can enjoy, and the mind naturally likes to serve. Although no one teaches us this in school, but the mind naturally likes to serve. Therefore, it is said it is more pleasant to give then receive. When you serve prasadam, actually you become more happy. When you give, you become so satisfied. And in this world, everyone is just interested in taking, 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 and no one is satisfied. But by giving, serving, then we actually become happy. So this is the natural duty of the mind. It likes to serve, even though no one wants to admit it. So in this world, and actually this is called our Sanatana Dharma, our constitutional position, that which we cannot be separated from us, is that we are servants. And we either serve in the material world, and we can't avoid serving, or we serve in the spiritual world. But either way, we are servants. So when that service spirit is engaged in devotional service to the Personality of Godhead without any motive, that is far better even than salvation. So with the mind, because the senses, the mind, the senses represent the demigods, and the mind represents the Lord, and the mind should be serving, that means that the senses should be serving the Lord, and the mind should be serving the Lord. So that is even better than liberation, because liberation is a negative concept. Freedom. Freedom from what? Freedom from misery. But when one is free, what does one do? One serves. And that is actually, when one serves Krishna in full freedom, that is actually the full satisfaction of the soul. So why is this bhakti or service to Krishna without any motive? Just see how wonderful this is. To serve just for the pleasure of Krishna, that's called bhakti siddhya gaish gariyase. We should serve Krishna without any motive. That is superior, far better than salvation or liberation or freedom from suffering. There is something positive in that. Such sweetness. So what is, why is it better? So the next verse, why is it superior than liberation? Bhakti 33, jarayat yasuyakosham niyagirnam analoyata. Bhakti, devotional service, dissolves the subtle body of the living entity without separate effort, just as fire in the stomach digests all we eat. If we perform bhakti, automatically the material subtle body, the mind, material mind is dissolved without even having to think about it, not even have to worry about liberation. That's basically the definition of liberation. It happens automatically when one performs bhakti, so it's superior. And plus, so in other words, one not only gets bhakti, but one gets so much more too. Just like when we eat something, we don't have to think, well, now I have to go digest my food, and we have to sit down and think, okay, now bring in those stomach acids, grumble, grumble, digest, dissolve, assimilate. No, just by eating, by Krishna's grace, it happens automatically. Similarly, by bhakti, automatically liberation occurs. Prabhupada explains in the purport. Bhakti is a far higher position than mukti. Mukti means what? Liberation. Why? Because a person's endeavor to get liberated from the material encagement is automatically served in devotional service. And one gets more too. Just as if I achieved $1 billion, I'd also have $1,000 automatically. I don't have to think, oh, now I've got my first billion, now how am I going to get $1,000? We don't have to think like that. Automatically it occurs. The example is given here that the fire in the stomach can digest whatever we eat. If the digestive power is sufficient, that whatever we can eat will be digested by the fire in the stomach. Similarly, a devotee does not have to try separately to attain liberation. That very service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the process of his liberation, because to engage oneself in the service of the Lord is to liberate oneself from material entanglement. Sri Bilamangala Thakur explained this position very nicely. He said, if I have unflinching devotion into the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, then mukti, or liberation, serves me as my maidservant. Mukti, the maidservant, is always ready to do whatever I ask. So the mukti lady is standing with folded hands, Bilamangala Thakur says, with folded hands saying, what can I do for you, for a devotee? And also, Srila Rupa Goswami in Bhakti Samita Sindhu, Nectar Devotion, he explains that the happiness of Brahmananda, or liberation, if it's multiplied, compared with the happiness of bhakti, so not only does one automatically get liberated if one performs bhakti, but in addition, if one takes the happiness of liberation or becoming one with the Supreme and multiplies it by a trillion, that means if you hundreds, thousands, multiply it by hundred, multiply it by a thousand, multiply it by millions, multiply it as a trillion, by trillions, if you take that happiness, it still cannot compare to an atomic fraction of the happiness derived from the ocean of devotional service. So it is completely insignificant, the happiness of liberation, because after all, it is only a removal of misery. So if you have a toothache or something, or a pain in your knee or something, and if you remove it, that pain, there is relief. But it is not true happiness. That relief feels good, but it is not actually happiness. Happiness is something positive. The removal of misery is not truly happiness. In the Hari Bhakti Sudaya, Prahlad Maharaj, while satisfying Lord Nrisingadev by his prayers, he says, "My dear Lord of the universe, I am feeling transcendental pleasure in your presence, and have become merged in the ocean of happiness. I now consider the happiness of Brahmananda to be no more than the water and the impression left by a cow's hoof on the earth compared to the ocean of bliss." Similarly, as confirmed in the Bhavarta Dipika, Sridhar Swami's commentary on the Srimad Bhagavatam. Now, Srila Rupa Goswami is specifically quoting Sridhar Swami, because Sridhar Swami, he's the original authoritative commentator in the Bhagavatam, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted him as authoritative. So the impersonalists, the Mayavadis, also accept Sridhar Swami, and they use what he says to prove impersonalism. But here's what Sridhar Swami himself says, comparing devotional service and impersonalism. This is from the Bhavarta Dipika. "My dear Lord, some of the fortunate persons who are swimming in the ocean of your nectar of devotion and who are relishing the nectar of the narration of your pastimes certainly know ecstasies which immediately minimize the value of the happiness derived from religiousness, economic development, sense gratification, and liberation. Such a transcendental devotee regards any kind of happiness other than devotional service as no better than straw in the street." So we could pass straw in the street day after day and not take any notice because we view it as insignificant. So compared to devotional service, what a devotee experiences, a devotee, an actual devotee, whose loving relationship with Krishna is awakened, he's living in that. There is nothing in this world, even liberation, that experience, that he sees as significant. It's all just something to be stepped over like straw in the street. So we can get an idea, by hearing this, we can get an idea of what happiness is there in devotional service. So that minimizes liberation, and also liberation automatically occurs when one takes the devotional service. Now he's going to describe some verses describing pure devotees, what they do, how do they get that happiness, what is the cause, the udivan, that the stimulant for their happiness, that ecstasy. A pure devotee, it's actually already been said there, a pure devotee who is attached to the activities of devotional service and who always engages in the service of my lotus feet never desires to become one with me. Such a devotee who is unflinchingly engaged always glorifies my pastimes and activities. So satatam kirtiyanto mam. He's always engaged in kirtan, yatantascha dvithavrata. He's always engaged in talking about Krishna, discussing Krishna, glorifying Krishna, hearing about Krishna. So this is so much minimizing Mayavadi, the philosophers who think that the goal is to become one with Krishna. Insignificant. Oh my mother, this is what pure devotees do. My devotees always see the smiling face of my form, speaking specifically about the deity, with eyes like the rising morning sun. What is the Sanskrit term for also the demigod who is in charge, who is a relative, a brother of Garuda, who means the reddish rising sun, who is
Aruna.
Aruna, yes. We sing Udila Aruna when the rising sun comes up in the morning, that reddish color. So Krishna's eyes are like that. So my devotees always see the smiling face of my form with eyes like the rising morning sun. They like to see my various transcendental forms, which are all benevolent. They are merciful. And they also talk favorably with me. So Prabhupada, I'll read some of Prabhupada's purport here. The second paragraph. There are many, so devotees talk about Krishna. They engage in a service unflinching, dridha vrataha. They are tight, their consciousness is fixed. I am a servant of Krishna. And they see the deity form with great happiness. And they talk with Krishna. There are many shastric injunctions which give instructions for carving forms of the Lord. These forms are not material. If God is all-pervading, then He is also in the material elements. There is no doubt about it, but the atheists think otherwise. Although they preach that everything is God, when they go to the temple and see the form of the Lord, they deny that He is God. According to their own theory, everything is God. Then why is the deity not God? Actually, they have no conception of God. The devotee's vision, however, is different. Their vision, the devotee's vision, is smeared with love of God. As soon as they see the Lord in His different forms, the devotees become saturated with love. For they do not find any difference between the Lord and His form in the temple, as do the atheists. The smiling face of the deity in the temple is beheld by the devotees as transcendental and spiritual, and the decoration of the body of the Lord is very much appreciated by the devotees. It is the duty of the spiritual master to teach how to decorate the deity in the temple, how to cleanse the temple, and how to worship the deity. There are different procedures and rules and regulations which are followed in temples of Vishnu. And devotees go there and see the deities, the vigraha, and spiritually enjoy the form because all of the deities are benevolent. They are merciful. The devotees express their minds before the deities. The devotee opens his heart to the deity. Sometimes in Vrindavan, you see some little old lady come up to the deity and you know, so take out some coin and put it there. And start talking and talking and expressing her mind and, oh, this problem, that problem. So the devotees, they talk to the deities, they express their minds before the deities. And in many instances, the deities also give answers. But one must be a very elevated devotee in order to be able to speak with the Supreme Lord. Sometimes the Lord informs the devotee through dreams. These exchanges of feelings between the deity and the devotee are not understandable by atheists, but actually the devotee enjoys them. Kapila Muni is explaining how the devotees see the decorated body and face of the deity and how they speak with him in devotional service. This is a very nice verse. We'll hear Prabhupada say something about it. Loudly, look. Louder.
Now, fortunately, people in Bombay say that our deity here is more beautiful. They say there is no such deity in Bombay.
Rasbihari.
They say, our duty to dress Krishna in such an attractive way that people actually see that it is very beautiful. Simply by appreciating it, they say, now the deity worship is very nice. Then they go step forward, immediately. Simply by appreciating. Then other things will come. Therefore, the temple worship should be exactly to the routine, to the instruction of the Shastra and Guru and Acharya, so that the worshipper in the temple as well as the visitor, both of them will be gradually seeing. things. Krishna is so kind that he has consented to appear in a way so that we can see. At the present moment, we cannot see Krishna as his spiritual embodied. Satchitananda Vigra, because we have no eyes to see Satchitananda Vigra. So, here is also Satchitananda Vigra, Archamukti. It is not ideology. The eighth class may say, so, but it is not so. Those who have got eyes, they get, just like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he entered the temple of Jagannath, immediately felt it, oh, here is my. Here is my. So one has to become santa, then one can see. But it is culture, my culture. Premanana Shrita Bhakti Gosha. Santa Sadai. When you develop that culture, when you develop that love for Krishna, then you will see immediately as you say, here is my. So, prasanna vakra parunara rukhana. Prasanna vakra. Prasanna means pleasing. Somebody was talking that their your beauty is just like trying to talk to prasanna. Yeah. He has to talk, but he's waiting. Whether you interested to talk to him. That's all. Krishna says that Desam Satatajuttanam Bhajatam Kirtipurpanam Buddhi Rubam Dadam. He talks. But with whom? Desam Satatajuttanam. One who is 24 hours engaged with love and faith in the service of the Lord. To whom? Just like if you want to talk with some big man, then you must have qualification. Is it possible that if you want to talk with the big man there, immediately you like, no, you cannot talk. You must be fit to talk with him. Similarly, Krishna is ready to talk with him. He has come. He has descended in Archamukti to talk with him. To be visible by you, that you make yourself ready and fit to talk with you, then you will stand conversation. Santasadaiva is the Lokanda. This is what? This is qualification.
Can everyone understand?
No.
Yeah? No? Okay. Here. You can read it later. Huh? Here.
I think latest news is that Radharani's beard's cheek is getting more fatter and fatter.
So, more about what pure devotees do. Upon seeing the charming forms of the Lord, smiling and attractive, and hearing his very pleasing words, the pure devotee almost loses all other consciousness. Just so focused on Krishna and his loving relationship with Krishna. His senses are freed from all other engagements and he becomes absorbed in devotional service. Thus, in spite of his unwillingness, he attains liberation without separate endeavor. We'll read some of Prabhupada's purport. When one is trained to become conscious of his position, he understands that he is a servitor of the Lord. Brahman refers to a state of self-realization. Even the third-class devotee, who is not advanced in knowledge of the Absolute Truth, but simply offers obeisances with great devotion, thinks of the Lord, sees the Lord in the temple, and brings forth flowers and fruit to offer to the deity. Even such a devotee becomes imperceptibly liberated. Shradayan Vitaha. With great devotion, the devotees offer worshipful respects and paraphernalia to the deity. The deities of Radha and Krishna, Lakshmi and Orion, Rama and Sita, are very attractive to devotees. So much so that when they see the statue decorated in the temple of the Lord, they become fully absorbed in thought of the Lord. That is the state of liberation. In other words, you know, by other methods. Even great impersonalists like Sukadev Goswami and the four Kumaras were attracted by the beauty of the deities in the temple, by the decorations and by the aroma of tulsi offered to the Lord, and they became devotees. Even though they were in the liberated state, instead of remaining impersonalists, they were attracted by the beauty of the Lord and became devotees. In this verse, the word vilas is very important. Vilas refers to the activities or pastimes of the Lord. It is a prescribed duty in temple worship that not only should one visit the temple to see the deity nicely decorated, but at the same time he should hear the recitation of Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, or some similar literature, which is regularly recited in the temple. It is the system in Vrindavan that in every temple there is a recitation of the Shastras. Even third-class devotees who have no literary knowledge or no time to read Srimad Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita get the opportunity to hear about the pastimes of the Lord. In this way, their minds may remain always absorbed in the thought of the Lord. That is the key. By hearing, even if they are illiterate, practically speaking, and have no time, just by hearing, their minds become absorbed in the thoughts of the Lord, His form, His activities, and His transcendental nature. This state of Krishna consciousness is a liberated state. When one's mind is absorbed in Krishna, then one is free from being absorbed in matter. That is the key, and that is what we are trying to do. Somehow or another, by chanting, by hearing, by remembering, by offering prayers, by serving, to somehow or another absorb the mind always in Krishna. Lord Chaitanya, therefore, recommended five important processes in the discharge of devotional service. One, to chant the holy names of the Lord. So these five processes, are very powerful. Even if one doesn't have great faith in them, if one engages in them, even a slight amount, one will get a great result. So the first is to chant the holy name of the Lord. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Second, to associate with devotees and serve them as far as possible. Third, to hear Srimad Bhagavatam. Four, to see the decorated temple and the deity. And if possible, five, to live in a place like Vrindavan or Mathura. These five items alone can help a devotee achieve the highest perfectional stage. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita and here in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that third class devotees can also imperceptibly achieve liberation as accepted in all the Vedic literatures. Again, why? How? Because their minds become absorbed in Krishna. Thus, Kapila Muni continues. So these are his instructions. She's asking, Devahuti is saying, please, I'm so unfortunate, I'm not very intelligent, so please tell me the essence. Don't give me anything really complicated, because if it's very complicated, I'm not going to be able to do it. So give me the essence so I can know exactly what I should do. And here it is, to somehow or another be absorbed in Krishna. The mind focused on Krishna by seeing the deity, by hearing about Krishna, by serving, etc. Text 37. Thus, because he is completely absorbed in thought of me, the devotee does not desire even the highest benediction obtainable in the upper planetary systems, including Satyalok. He does not desire the eight material perfections obtained from mystic yoga, nor does he desire to be elevated to the kingdom of God. Yet, even without desiring them, the devotee enjoys, even in this life, all the offered benedictions. So one who has learned the art of focusing his mind on Krishna attains so much happiness that he has no other desires. Neither happiness, he doesn't desire the happiness available in this world, on the heavenly worlds, or even he's so satisfied and he's actually associating with Krishna by thinking of Krishna, he doesn't even desire to go back to Godhead, to go to the spiritual world, to go to Vaikuntha. But yet, without even desiring these things, he obtains all benedictions. Prabhupada's purport, just about in the middle of the page. A devotee does not aspire for all these material pleasures, either mystic powers, anything, although they are available to him simply by wishing. By the grace of the Lord, a devotee can achieve wonderful success simply by willing, desiring. But a real devotee does not like that. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has taught that one should not desire material opulence or material reputation, nor should one try to enjoy material beauty. One should simply aspire to be absorbed in the devotional service of the Lord. Even if one does not get liberation, but has to continue the process of birth and death unlimitedly. Actually, however, to one who engages in Krishna consciousness, liberation is already guaranteed. Devotees enjoy all the benefits of the higher planets and the Vaikuntha planets also. It is especially mentioned here, Bhagavatim Bhadram. In the Vaikuntha planets, everything is eternally peaceful, yet a pure devotee does not even desire to be promoted there. So just imagine how much happiness, even in this world he's experiencing, that he's completely free from any extraneous desire other than to be absorbed in Krishna's service and in thoughts of Krishna. Still, he gets that advantage, going to the spiritual world. And he enjoys all the facilities of the material and spiritual worlds even during the present lifespan. So Kapila Muni continues. Now these benefits, he's going to explain these benefits, how they're different, because the materialist tries so hard, or anyone who has the slightest selfish desire is trying so hard to get his needs. So the devotee will get more than his needs, and yet there's a difference between what the devotee will get and what the materialist gets, even though superficially they may seem the same. The Lord continued, "My dear mother, devotees who receive such transcendental opulences are never bereft of them. Neither weapons nor the change of time can destroy such opulences. Because the devotees accept me as their friend, their relative, their son, preceptor, benefactor, and supreme deity, they cannot be deprived of their possessions at any time." In other words, a devotee can live satisfied with his absorption in Krishna, accepting as mercy whatever Krishna gives him, completely fearless, because they take Krishna as everything for them. They get everything in return, but they don't care about anything other than being absorbed in Krishna's service. And time, which crushes everything, and we've heard about this so much in this third canto, how time crushes everything in the material world, time cannot touch that which a devotee possesses. Because the devotee, everything is Krishna. Thus, the devotee worships me, who worships me, the all-pervading Lord of the universe, in unflinching devotional service, gives up all aspirations to be promoted to heavenly planets or to become happy in this world with wealth, children, cattle, home, or anything in relationship with the body. I take him to the other side of birth and death. We're going to go a little bit over today. Prabhupada's purport. For a devotee, there is no concern for this life or the next life, because in any life he does not desire elevation or material prosperity or a high grade or a low grade of life. He prays to the Lord, "My dear Lord, it does not matter where I am born, but let me be born even as an ant in the house of a devotee." A pure devotee does not pray to the Lord for liberation from this material bondage. Actually, the pure devotee never thinks that he is fit for liberation. Considering his past life and his mischievous activities, he thinks that he is fit to be sent to the lowest region of hell. If in this life I am trying to become a devotee, this does not mean that in my many past lives I was 100% pious. That is not possible. A devotee, therefore, is always conscious of his real position. Only by his full surrender to the Lord, by the Lord's grace, are his sufferings made shorter. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, "Surrender unto me, and I will give you protection from all kinds of sinful reactions." That is his mercy. But this does not mean that one who has surrendered to the lotus feet of the Lord has committed no misdeeds in his past life. A devotee always prays, "For my misdeeds, may I be born again and again. But my only prayer is that I may not forget your service." The devotee has that much mental strength, and he prays to the Lord, "May I be born again and again, but let me be born in the home of your pure devotee, so that I may again get a chance to develop myself." A pure devotee is not anxious to elevate himself in his next birth. He has already given up that sort of hope. In any life in which one is born as a householder or even as an animal, one must have some children, some resources, or some possessions. But a devotee is not anxious to possess anything. He is satisfied with whatever is obtainable by God's grace. He is not at all attached to improving his social status or improving the status of education of his children. He is not neglectful. He is dutiful. But he does not spend too much time on the upliftment of temporary household or social life. He fully engages in the service of the Lord, and for other affairs, he simply spares as much time as absolutely necessary. Yatartam upayunjataha. Such a pure devotee does not care for what is going to happen in the next life or in this life. He does not care even for family, children, or society. He fully engages in the service of the Lord in Krishna consciousness. It is stated in Bhagavad Gita that without the knowledge of the devotee, the Lord arranges for his devotee to be immediately transferred to his transcendental abode just after leaving his body. After quitting his body, he does not go into the womb of another mother. The ordinary common living entity after death is transferred to the womb of another mother according to his karma or activities to take another type of body. But as far as the devotee is concerned, he is at once transferred to the spiritual world in the association of the Lord. That is the Lord's special mercy. How it is possible is explained in the following verses. Because he is all-powerful, the Lord can do anything and everything. He can excuse all sinful reactions. He can immediately transfer a person to Vaikuntha. That is the inconceivable power of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is favorably disposed to the pure devotee. So Krishna is telling us here, Kapila Muni is explaining the science, that we should give ourselves completely to him and not worry about anything. We should be dutiful, do it and not be neglectful. But our heart should be given to him. But naturally, when we think of doing that, we become afraid. We think, well, who's going to take care of me? Of course, Krishna promises that he will take care of us. But will he? Can he even? So then he explains. He can. He certainly can. The terrible fear of birth and death can never be forsaken by anyone who resorts to any shelter other than myself, For I am the Almighty Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the original source of all creation, and also the Supreme Soul of all souls. It is because of my supremacy that the wind blows out of fear of me, the sun shines out of fear of me, and the Lord of the clouds, Indra, sends forth showers out of fear of me, fire burns out of fear of me, and death goes about taking its toll out of fear of me. Everything is working Maya Dakshena Prakriti Suyate Sacharachanan. Everything is working by Krishna. He is all powerful. Therefore, he is worthy of us. He is a suitable person, the only suitable person for us to take shelter of. The yogis, equipped with transcendental knowledge and renunciation and engaged in devotional service for their eternal benefit, take shelter of my lotus feet. And since I am the Lord, they are thus eligible to enter into the kingdom of God without fear. Therefore, persons whose minds are fixed on the Lord engage in the intensive practice, Tivrena Bhakti Yogena, the intensive practice of devotional service that is the only means for attainment of the final perfection of life. I'll read that verse again, and then we'll read Prabhupada's purport, which is fairly short. And that will end the chapter. Etvaneva lokesmin pumsa nisreyos sodaya tivrena bhakti yogena mano mayopitas tiram. Persons whose mind, this is the conclusion, therefore, persons whose minds are fixed on the Lord, engaged in the intensive practice of devotional service, fix one's mind upon him and serve him. That is the only means for attainment of the final perfection of life. So that is the conclusion. Fix our mind on Krishna and serve Krishna with great devotion, and that brings one the only way that we can attain the ultimate perfection of life. Here's Prabhupada's purport. Hear the words, mano mayarpitam, which means the mind being fixed on me, are significant. One should fix his mind on the lotus feet of Krishna or his incarnation. To be fixed steadily in that freedom is the way of liberation. Ambarish Maharaj is an example. He fixed his mind on the lotus feet of the Lord. He spoke only on the pastimes of the Lord. He smelled only the flowers and tulsi offered to the Lord. He walked only to the temple of the Lord. He engaged his hands in cleansing the temple. He engaged his tongue in tasting the foodstuff offered to the Lord. And he engaged his ears in hearing the great pastimes of the Lord. In that way, all his senses were engaged. First of all, the mind should be engaged at the lotus feet of the Lord very steadily and naturally. Because the mind is the master of the senses, when the mind is engaged, all the senses become engaged. That is bhakti yoga. Yoga means controlling the senses. The senses cannot be controlled in the proper sense of the term. They're always agitated. This is true also with a child. How long can he be forced to sit down silently? It is not possible. Even Arjuna said, Chanchalam hi mana Krishna, the mind is always agitated. The best course is to fix the mind on the lotus feet of the Lord. Mano mayarpitam stiram. If one seriously engages in Krishna consciousness, that is the highest perfectional stage. All Krishna conscious activities are on the highest perfectional level of human life. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the third canto, 25th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Glories of Devotional Service. So in this way, Kapila Muni has told Devahuti very much in a straight and direct way what the essence of the yoga system that he is going to explain to her in more detail is. And this instruction is very important for us to take deeply within us, because this is the essence. And as we engage in our life in Krishna consciousness, we always want to check to see how our activities are matching up with this essence. Okay, thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Sri Kapila Muni Ki Jai. Fixing the mind on Krishna Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Primanandaya.